it's interesting with the Texans. As much as as much as the offense is kind of a work in progress, especially on the offensive line, they are stacking up players on the defensive side of the ball over the last few years.
Yeah,
you know, whether it's through free agency, bringing in Azeez Al-Shaair and Danielle Hunter, or probably more beneficially through the draft, because these are the guys that you get A, cheap for 4 years, and then B, you may want to keep them around, like Derek Stingley Jr. Ben Solak, who was out here, he's a writer for ESPN.
He was out here Ringer forever.
Yeah, and now he's with ESPN, and he was out here for a couple days. Mm-hmm. He's got a big piece on Derek Stingley Jr. coming out, I think. Did a long interview with him yesterday after practice.
Yeah.
Interviewed some of the other guys in the secondary about Stingley, Petrie, and I think Kalen Bullock as well.
He's also very high on D'Amico. He loves D'Amico.
Yeah.
Which is interesting, too, because I think he's like one of these new age, like almost like a self-taught X's and O's analyst type guy, and very nerdy about it, but in a charming way.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes those guys tend to be in love with the offensive minds, but I think he really appreciates everything D'Amico brings to the table.
Yeah, for sure. He has an article that he wrote before he got here, I think. It dropped yesterday, so August the 6th. August the 6th was yesterday. I'm losing track, man. Hey, we're at that stage of the trip where with the time difference and everything else.
You fearing that I died last night.
There was
that
too. Yeah. We'll get to that story
in the
9 o'clock hour. Ben Solak has a piece, the 20 most important second-year NFL defenders in 2025. And guess who made the list, Seth?
Who?
Well, several people. 20 to be exact. But two in particular. Kamari Lassiter and Kalen Bullock. Both made the list. And it's funny, when you page down on this list, this is a pretty good defensive class. Byron Murphy, I'm just going down the list here till I get to Lassiter, and then I'll stop there. Jared Verse, I know you love Jared Verse.
Jared Verse, defensive end from the Rams that the Texans will see in week one.
Chop Robinson.
You guys nervous about the O-line?
Yeah.
We're going to get tested.
Exactly. Well, the two cornerbacks from Philly, Quinyon Mitchell and Cooper DeJean, you know, who were part of a Super Bowl winning secondary.
Neither of whom had as many interceptions as Kalen Bullock and Kamari Lassiter.
No. He just got this Super Bowl ring. Yeah. Terrion Arnold, who the Texans may or may not have been trying to move up and get.
They
traded out of the first round, they were reportedly trying to trade back into the first round.
Well, Terrion Arnold, and a lot of that, it just makes sense because the way people talked about him was very similar to the way people talk about Will Anderson.
Yeah.
And all of those undefinable character traits that D'Amico and Nick together seem to have gotten a good knack for identifying. Yeah, Terrion Arnold has a lot of those.
Nate Wiggins, Tavondre Sweat, Cooper DeJean, who I just mentioned. And here we go. Kamari Lassiter, cornerback for the Houston Texans. And Ben Solak says, there's four paragraphs. I'm going to try to read the highlights of it. Lassiter gave up an absurd 45.6% completion rate when targeted last season, 11.5% below expectation for where he was targeted and what separation he allowed. Those are next-gen stats. The more like, you know, just narrative stuff. His ability to nudge, jostle, impede, and otherwise disrupt opposing receivers as they address the football was second to no corner in the game last year, and he only drew four penalties. Four times all year.
And that's notable because he played a very physical brand of football at Georgia, and they were up pressing all the time at the line of scrimmage. So for a guy that doesn't have great combine speed and all of that, people wondered, all right, does he rely too much on being physical with his hands? And he can't get away with as much in the NFL as you can get away with it in college.
Yeah.
And he did a great job learning that. And when I talked to him the other day, that's specifically what he had talked about was he said, you know, I've been looking at what offenses might be thinking of me and where I need to improve. So I asked him, I was like, okay, well, what do you think offenses, as they're looking at your film in the offseason, what are they thinking about, looking at, maybe thinking about attacking with you? And he said, well, when I'm off the ball, you know, because I hadn't done a lot of it in college. And you could see last year the improvement he made and playing out in space without that security blanket of being able to stab somebody at the line of scrimmage. And it was cool. I liked it because he actually gave me an answer.
Yeah.
Usually you ask players that, and they're like, they hem right up. And he just flat out said, I want to be better at that. I haven't done that.
That's excellent. Lassiter fell in the draft. This is Solak. For his due to his poor long speed, but he won at the line of scrimmage so consistently that vertical receivers rarely found free releases at the line and space outside the numbers. His love for physicality was not exclusive to the passing game. Yeah, this is big. A fiend in the short areas who finds no greater joy than blowing up a screenplay.
Yeah.
Lassiter was 10th among league corners in run stop EPA, that's expected points added, and 4th in run stop rate. This is a D'Amico Ryans corner through and through.
Yeah, I think that people really have started to use that phrasing a lot, a D'Amico Ryans type of player. And a lot of it is just simply a lust for violence.
Yeah.
Do you have a lust for violence? You don't have to make it any more complicated than it is. You can watch that and see it in college. Nick had used some phrase that I like, and I'll think of 3 minutes after the show is over. But kind of in that same line of thinking of just, you know, that you don't need the advanced stats to watch film and see whether a guy's got a love for the physical side of the game.
Yeah.
It shows up very, very clearly.
Yep.
Especially in college where you might have some really nice clean shots at times.
Okay, so Ben Solak does bring up one thing that's maybe a concern, and it goes back to something we just talked about, the heavy amount of contact and the penalties.
Yeah.
He says, I remain skeptical that Lassiter can keep up this caliber of play without committing more penalties. Receivers were begging refs for help by the end of the season. But if he can, he'll remain one of the league's best CB2s.
Hey, beg away.
Yeah, yeah.
That is real, though, too, because officials start to get a feel for how different guys play.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's lobbying that goes on before the game. Coaches and players will tell, like, hey, you know, just so you know, I just want to help you do your job.
Yeah.
No, hey, it's not about me.
Just planting the seed, man.
I'm just trying to help you be a better official. This is what this guy does.
Yep, yep.
But that's where I've always loved, you know, DeAndre Hopkins. DeAndre Hopkins was really good at pushing off. But it was because it wasn't just random. He knew what he could and couldn't get away with based on his positioning, where he was between the official and the player on the field and everything, and just how much he could get away with. So there's an art to that, and I think Kamari's kind of wired that same way, that he's not randomly – he doesn't use physical contact randomly and without thinking about it.
Yeah.
So I think
he's strategic about it.
He's just got to continue to work at being surgical with it.
Obviously, the other Texan named to this list, we're going through the 20 most important second-year defenders in the NFL. Kamari Lassiter, Ben Solak put this list together from ESPN. Kamari Lassiter is on the list, and Kalen Bullock, not surprisingly, is on this list as well, because we've seen some of that top 10 at each position voting. Kalen Bullock's getting a lot of love around the league this year, this offseason, just based on the 5 interceptions last year and the 5 he probably should have had last
year. He's also the classic guy that you might be watching to watch one specific player, but this other guy keeps flashing.
Yeah.
You hear this in recruiting stories
all the time.
You know, college recruiters are watching some kid, and they're like, wait, who's this backup that's always around the ball?
Yeah.
And everything. Kalen's kind of that guy, the NFL version of it, that you might be watching Kamari Lassiter and Derek Stingley.
Yeah.
But, like, here, this guy, where'd this guy show
always
up
around
from?
The ball.
Yeah.
Yeah. So here's what Ben Solak says about Kalen Bullock. Only 4 rookies earned at least 1 All-Pro vote last season. Okay, so All-Pro is best. It's not Pro Bowl.
Yeah.
This is best of the best. Edgerton Cooper, Cooper DeJean, Quinyon Mitchell, and Kalen Bullock. Somebody voted for Kalen Bullock for All-Pro last year. How many national fans know about this third-round rookie who served as the center fielder for one of the most aggressive secondaries in the NFL? After this season, many more should. Bullock's film is unbelievable. Let me pause right there. Solak loves Kalen Bullock. When he tweeted out this article yesterday, he listed probably 4 or 5 of the guys that were on the list. And after Kalen Bullock, he put in parentheses, GOAT. He really likes Kalen Bullock. He says, Bullock's film is unbelievable. This kind of plays into what you were talking about, Seth. He's one of the fastest players on the field at any given time. He hit 21.58 miles per hour on the chase down tackle of Tank Bigsby, which might have saved that Jacksonville game for them. Remember that?
Yeah.
Tank Bigsby breaks into the open field. This is back in week 4. And Kalen Bullock chases him down and tackles him at like the 5-yard line. And the Jags went 4 and out inside the 5. They went for a touchdown, and the Texans stopped them and had a goal line stand. And they won that game by 4 on a last-second touchdown.
And that was a classic example of where Kalen Bullock, a veteran player, might have been in position to make that play earlier in the down.
That was
one thing. I mean, that he would tell you that himself. In terms of really understanding and anticipating where the problems are, as a free safety, it's as much about understanding where the potential threats are and which angles to take and where to align on the field, it takes a lot of time to really get into that. And I think he showed a lot of progress as the season went along. But even when he was taking the wrong angles or maybe aligned like 3 or 4 yards to the left or right of where he should have been, he's able to make up for it.
Yeah.
And the fact that he showed progress on the mental side of the game as the season went along is the really promising. You know he has a physical ability. It's just a matter of really dialing in that part where you end up being this freakishly almost like you have ESP type of free safety.
You spent time with both of these guys at this camp. You talked to Kamari Lassiter for a while and Kalen Bullock for a while after practice earlier this week. How impressed were you by these are both guys who are 22 years old right now.
I think it's I was already impressed by them because there is something about a lot of the guys that they've drafted on defense in the last couple of years, and I think I'm going to talk to D'Amico about this afternoon. That it's kind of a level of professionalism that you don't expect in terms of just how obsessed they are with the finer details. And there's so many guys that it takes them 4 or 5 years to have it pounded in their heads how important the attention to detail is. And I think these guys are just kind of wired that way. They were like, it's easy to complain about kids these days. I don't know. These last couple of years with the Texans, I feel like I see a lot of football players out there that – there weren't a lot of back when I played that were as intelligent or that understood the assignment as well as a lot of these guys do. So it's a really cool environment to watch the defense and especially the young guys on defense operate.
This was the last sentence that Solak has about Kalen Bullock. He said, there are rough edges to sand down. He talks about the drops.
Yeah.
But watching Bullock reminds me so much of watching a young Jesse Bates in Cincinnati. Hmm. If the Texans have the best defense in the league this season, something I'm quite close to predicting, Bullock will be a huge reason why.
Yeah. I think then that little reaction nerve says, oh, wait a second, let's not get cocky before we see this. Like, where are the potential downfalls, et cetera, et cetera. Because of everything that I just talked about, it's hard for me to really believe that either Kamari or Kalen are going to have setbacks. But I said the same thing about C.J. Stroud going into last year.
Yeah.
And I don't feel any differently about C.J. Stroud's long-term future. I think with C.J., the difference was there were multiple things wrong with the offense.
There's so much interdependence with a quarterback and everything else.
That it became really hard for C.J. to take the next step that I think he would have taken if the environment was better and the circumstances were better, where it's obvious on the defense that that's a really good environment right now. You know what? I was talking to somebody the other day from another team who said that, and I won't say which team because obviously he was talking about this team, or the team he was on, but he said he's been in places where he was talking about the Texans where like, man, the best guys, the best players on the team, it's amazing when it's an amazing environment when those are also the best dudes.
The tone setters.
The best people, but also the best people.
Yeah.
Just kind of like when they're the right kinds of guys versus being on a team where the best players on the teams are just kind of bum people. Like they're just jerks.
Yep.
Or they're just they don't care about the team. You could be Vince Lombardi, and it's hard to take a team like that and get the most out of them because – You end up spending all your time worrying about this motivational crap.
Yeah. It's exhausting.
Yeah. The motivational crap, I call it crap, but it's obviously a really important thing. But the really good teams are led by the veterans on the team and the best players on the team. And then the coach can really worry about, it takes a whole lot off the coach's plate. And I think D'Amico has kind of created that environment on the defense, at least, where the players set the tone and there's a certain culture. And you don't have to worry necessarily about giving a PowerPoint presentation about the importance of good habits.
Yeah,
every day.
Man, they're self-starters.
You don't want to forget about it completely, but you don't have to be hammering that every single day instead of a lot of the other more fun stuff.
You know what I like about this list that Ben Solak put together of the 20 most important second-year defensive players in the NFL is that Kool-Aid McKinstry's not on it.
Oh.
Remember when the Saints jumped up over the Texans on draft night? Well, on day two of the draft.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at the party that night, and there's all these Texan fans. And as the players are kind of, it's starting to come into focus who the guys are that are going to be sitting there when the Texans pick at 42. And when Kool-Aid McKinstry got picked at 41 by the Saints – Texan fans went ballistic that they didn't get him. And then they draft Kamari Lassiter from Georgia, you know, McKinstry with Alabama, Lassiter with Georgia, who doesn't have as sizzly a name as Kool-Aid McKinstry.
Yeah.
But there were Texan fans who were disappointed they didn't get Kool-Aid McKinstry. And I swear to God, I said this that night. I'm like, 90% of you booing have watched 10 snaps of Kool-Aid McKinstry.
You like that he's named Kool-Aid.
Yes, you like that he's named Kool-Aid. You think that makes him a better player than he is.
Especially for a defensive back. There's just something where it kind of just feels like and it's ironic that it would be Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
Which is, like, not a very scary drink.
At
when you
all.
Jump like it's, yeah, it's not like you
I don't know, the Kool-Aid
Whiskey
guy.
Whiskey McKinstry.
When he
that's a pretty cool
Whiskey
name.
Whiskey McKinstry is pretty cool. That sounds like some sort of explorer in the 1800s.
Yeah.
No, the Kool-Aid guy's a little scary when he bashes through the wall.
Yeah, that's true.
A little bit. I mean, he's got a big smile on his face, but he's, that's.
Does anybody still do that?
I haven't seen a Kool-Aid commercial in forever.
Every now and then, I think on the every now and then I'll end up like I'll be babysitting my nephew or something, and I'll see commercials, like kids commercials, because I never see kids commercials.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm blown away by two things. One is like some of them are pretty funny, but two is like this should be illegal. It's like these kids are so moldable. They're so swayed by the advertisements, you know?
That's the goal.
I'm not saying, listen, everybody, settle down, all right? Yeah. I'm not saying that you should ban it, or I'm not taking away free speech or anything, but there is a part of it, like, this is too easy.
Yeah.
My God, marketing to kids?
Oh, yeah.
I make them want
brains
this
are
toy
very
so
fertile.
Quickly and easily.
yeah, man.
And make them think, they're going to beg their parents for this for six straight months.
Capitalism.
I know. No.
It's capitalism. What can you say?
I never would have said this should be illegal before I had a child. Now I'm like, they need to ban this.
Well, now my kids are out of that age range. I probably said it for like 10 years because it's costing me money.
Oh, that's like when you're a teenager and you're laughing at adults who are worried about lyrics and music.
Yeah.
And now you and then you get to an age where you're kind of like, well, I don't want to be that guy, but that's did she really have to use that word?
Right. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Live here at the Greenbrier, right outside the Sports Performance Center right here. We've got Kaimi Fairbairn kicking field goals right in front of us. All the players doing some stretching over on the far field. Going to be scrimmage style today out here. So we're going to see like actual, not just plays 11 on 11, but they're going to be trying to simulate, I think, some things, some in-game things,
some timeouts. Like TV timeouts.
TV timeouts is what I heard, yeah. So this should be a really interesting day of practice, and we'll have you covered all day long here, or at least all morning long, and then Seth and I'll come back and share our thoughts with you. So we've got that going on. Callahan and McNair are going to join us at the bottom of the hour, thereabouts. Sometime here in the 9 o'clock hour, we'll talk to the owners of the Houston Texans. Up next, you got some Danielle Hunter audio. You want to hear that?
Yeah, I'll get that to Ben.
Okay, yeah. We got what's a good tease for your Danielle Hunter audio?
It's Danielle describing exactly how that vicious spin move that he pulled on Penei Sewell last year, just exactly how that happened.
Oh, cool.
And how it was a surprise to a lot of people.
Okay, good. Yeah. We'll do that. A little Danielle Hunter and the McNair family coming up later on this hour. Stay there. You're listening to Payne and Pendergast. Hi, Payne and Pendergast with you. We are live in West Virginia. We should be talking to the McNairs, Cal and Hannah, a little later on this hour. Looking forward to chatting with the owners of the Texans. In the meantime, we are getting ready for what it sounds like is going to be a lively day out here. They're in pads, and the play out here is going to be very situational and scrimmage-like, so this should be fun. I don't know if it'll still be ones versus ones and twos versus twos. I'm kind of hoping, Seth, that there's a little more blending of which strings are going against each other.
Yeah, ones versus twos.
I wouldn't mind seeing the first string offense go against somebody other than possibly the best defense in football.
Yeah, you know what's funny? I was talking to Drew Hodgson yesterday, former Texans offensive lineman, and I had floated to him, you know, he was asking about the offensive line, and I said part of the problem is, man, this defense is operating at a very advanced level, whereas the offense is just trying to figure things out. And I said, I feel like it should be. I feel like they should go ones versus twos a couple times just to get a feel for operating the offense the right way.
Mm-hmm.
And Drew said, "I don't know, man. That's kind of crush the ego right there. I don't like you feel like you're being treated like a remedial student or something.
Oh, like you're not playing on the all Madden level anymore. You're playing college level."
Yeah, and I said, "I don't mean just the offensive line or anything. Just make the whole format of practice ones versus twos, twos versus ones." And then I started thinking, boy, but the number one defense versus the second string offense would be That might be criminal.
You know what, it's interesting. And I'm not saying that the second-string offense would deal on them or anything like that. But I would. Davis Mills has had an excellent training camp. I would kind of like to see him go against a little higher level of competition just to see if he can, you know, make some things happen.
That's a good call there, Shauners.
Thanks.
You bolstered my case.
That's right. I'd like to see it, too.
There's times out here where it's true. Like anything, when you're trying to learn something new and you just get dropped in the most difficult circumstances, it's hard to sometimes even just to operate effectively, realistically. And I feel like that's where the offense has been. I'm not making excuses for him or anything. It's just that's the reality of the situation.
Yeah.
But you also don't want him to feel like you're, you know, putting a like floaty on him and throwing him in the pool. Wait a second,
inflating
CJ.
Floaties.
I know what. Don't go in the deep end, CJ. Yeah. You don't go past that line in the pool there.
The buoys.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right, so you talked to Danielle Hunter yesterday.
I did. Yeah. I had a nice conversation with him. And
tweeted out a picture of him, and I feel like we should send to foreign countries and say, this is why you shouldn't mess with us. This guy right here. We've got a million of this guy. We've got one.
It's funny because there's lots of guys on this team that have pretty impressive physiques. Like Azeez Alshire, pretty impressive physique. But even Azeez Alshire a couple weeks ago was talking about how he wishes he could look like Danielle. And you don't really quite appreciate it until you're standing right next to Danielle and he's wearing a sleeveless shirt. And you're like, come on, man.
Yeah.
This isn't fair
at all.
It's
not real.
It's not fair.
Yeah.
And but he obviously works at it.
Yeah.
So the one thing, I'd wanted to ask him about how he gained 5 pounds, because that was kind of a surprise when he said he gained 5 pounds.
Yeah, I'm looking at him like, where?
It's not like a guy that looked like he needed to add bulk or anything. He said it was from pull-ups. He's just really focusing on weighted pull-ups, doing weighted pull-ups all off.
So I got to look at his lats today, maybe.
They're impressive. News alert. Compared to last year when they looked awful or something, I don't know. I don't think he was intending to gain 5 pounds. It was just because he started focusing on weighted pull-ups. And I put that into the bucket of advice that people won't follow. I love hearing advice from successful people and the advice that I know people won't follow. Football players especially, you get so fixated on the bench press, and it's really hard to convince high school kids that they should really also be doing as many reps of bench press as you do. You need to do the same number of back exercises or deadlifts or whatever, but it can build mass and it makes you more functionally strong. So that was cool.
And you'll look just like Danielle Hunter when it's all over.
I had a very meathead conversation with him for about 5 minutes on the value of pull-ups. Which is going to be better for a podcast or something than the radio. But this is my favorite part. This is the one time during the interview where Danielle actually got pretty animated.
Yeah.
We were talking about pass rush and how much so much of it is just drilling it, scouting your opponent, having a plan, but then like kind of letting your reaction take over. Mm-hmm. But he said that he usually has a pretty good plan for how he wants to attack a guy going into a game. But as many of you recall, he had one of the sickest pass rush moves I've ever seen against one of the best offensive tackles in the league, Penei Sewell, mm-hmm. in the Detroit Lions game, where he went upfield, jumped inside, then spun back around to the outside, ended up pressuring the quarterback, not getting a sack. But as we're talking about how he usually has a pretty good plan for how he's going to attack guys, this is how that particular move came to be.
That move that I did on Penei, that just happened.
You know where it came from?
That just happened.
It just happened.
That just happened.
It was beautiful.
It was cool to see his eyes kind of light up. He's so calm, cool, and collected.
But it just happened.
Yeah, it just happened. And, well, we were also talking about how as a pass rusher you learn that, you know, you want to have a plan, but on any specific move you don't ever want to be thinking necessarily this is exactly what I'm going to do.
Yep.
You just kind of – it just comes to you.
Yep.
And you get into that flow state of everything happening. But that particular sequence of moves that he pulled wasn't even anything he'd ever consciously thought about. And that's where people will say he's like an artist as a pass rusher. Mm-hmm. And that sounds like how people describe art.
Yeah.
You get really, really technically proficient, but then something happens where it's almost like the God or the universe takes over.
Yeah.
And you're almost like observing your body. Like that's what that one play looks like. That dude, he might be the most dialed in human being I've ever met in terms of just, I don't think he thinks about a single thing other than just but just
pull-ups and football
and pass rushing
pull-ups,
and everything else. Yeah.
Pull-ups and football. That's it. So I think we're about to get Callen, Hanna, McNair here.
Who are they? Who they?
They are the owners of the National Football League franchise in
and
the
Mike
city
D'Antoni.
Of Houston. And Mike D'Antoni, too.
Oh, yeah,
oh my God.
In Mike D'Antoni for support, Cal.
We need more headsets.
Mike D'Antoni not looking a day older than the last
time I saw him.
Yeah.
What's up, Coach? How are you? Good to see you. All right, we've got two headsets, so whoever wants to sit down and take them, let's go. All right, we're going to get Mike D'Antoni and
Cal.
Cal McNair. All right.
Hannah, do you want a headset? We could scrounge up a headset somewhere. Okay. We'll have Mike on for a little bit.
Yep.
We're not going to try to get the Pelicans game plan or anything. Because Mike is working. And what's your role now with?
No, I'm done.
Oh, you're done?
I'm done.
Are you good?
First summer, yeah.
No way. Yeah. Really? Okay, so what was your official role with the Pelicans?
Probably coaching advisor.
Yeah.
And I would talk with Willie. Willie Green.
Yeah.
Great guy, great coach. And just, you know, sit down with him after every game and we just talk basketball.
Really?
Yeah, it was fun.
Basketball and then probably human stuff a little bit too, just.
You know, coaches are good.
Yeah.
And X's and O's, everybody knows X's and O's.
Yeah.
So most of us human, how would you treat a guy? You know, you got to tell him something. What would you do before the game, after the game? Would you call him and, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah. Who did you have in that capacity when you were a coach? Did you have somebody?
No, it's just kind of new. It's I think the Van Gundys have done a little bit. And Steve Clifford, some ex-coaches have done, especially the young coaches, first time they're on the bench.
Mm.
And I started when Willie's first year. So he kind of named it. As we grew, he didn't really, you know, fourth year. It's like, okay, coach, I got it.
I feel like you need to, you know what you need to do for that? Your office should have been a porch somewhere overlooking a lake or something.
Oh, yeah.
Where Willie just comes over late at night and he's like, hey, coach, can I just sit out? And you sit in rocking chairs and you can sit there and kind of just think about it.
Oh,
you got a different perspective on things. He's in the heat of the moment and you can kind of almost like when you somebody you tell
so
a younger
a therapist.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people support, you know, all the coaches support the players. You know, yeah, owners are owners.
Kyle. Yeah.
Yep.
But nobody supports the coach.
I think he meant that nicely, Cal. Yeah.
He said, you know,
everybody's
owners.
Got their roles. That's what he meant.
I did
a little drive-by on Cal.
Off on their yachts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's funny.
But nobody supports the coach. And one of the things coaches need is just feedback about, did I screw that up? That I did, you know, it's like, build them up. Because you can go into tailspins, and that's when you make bad decisions.
Yeah.
We were talking about that earlier with quarterbacks. And, you know, as a quarterback, you're a leader of a team and you make mistakes. And it's not, I think most quarterbacks, it's not that they feel awful that they made a mistake. It's that they let everybody else down. And that's harder to come back from that than just you yourself disappointing.
100%. You almost feel embarrassed being around the other guys because you do have that feeling.
Yeah.
And it's more of a support and trying to get him confident. Doing what he does.
Mm-hmm.
And then if he's good enough, he's good.
Yeah.
If he's not, you're not.
Yeah.
But you can't make decisions when you're down the dumps.
Yeah.
And you got to be positive.
Okay, so while we got you here for a couple minutes, what did you think about the job Ime Udoka did with the Rockets this past season?
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he's a good coach.
Yeah.
I was with him on the bench in Brooklyn
for
a year. So I've got to know Ime pretty well. Good coach, tough guy, good guy. And now they got Kevin Durant.
Yeah, how do you think that's going to work?
Right, it's going to work well. You got a great player.
Yeah.
So it's going to work well now. I'm sure the expectations are off the roof, as usual. Oklahoma City might have something to say about it. But they'll compete for a championship, and that's where it should be.
Yeah, absolutely. So where's the connection? Did the connection here go back to the – and I'm pointing to Cal McNair and Mike D'Antoni here. If you're just tuning in, Mike D'Antoni dropping in here on us in West Virginia, which is your – this is your home state here.
Right.
The connection with the Texans here, does it go back to the Rockets days, or was it something that kind of came up when the Texans started coming to the Greenbrier back in 2017?
No, obviously.
How did you guys get to know each other?
Well, a little bit here because the first time they were here, got to know them a little bit. But mostly – through charity work in the city of Houston when the flood happened back in 16, I think, and raising money for SBP, which put people back in their homes. And the McNairs were a big part of that, as they always are in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And just meeting them and really marvel what they do.
It's and great. What's is Laurel around here?
She's raising money somewhere.
Is she? Oh, is that what she? So you've retired, but she's out there still.
Oh, she's working. Yeah,
she's working. Yeah.
She's the younger of the two. So yeah, she has to work for another 10 years.
She's awesome.
Yeah. She's out there making the world a better place. Yeah,
hopefully,
awesome.
Hopefully. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we had talked to Laurel about the flood relief in West Virginia. Gosh, right. It was 7-8 years ago now.
It's about the same as. Harvey.
It was the same summer.
It was in Houston.
That same time, wasn't it? Yeah. And yeah, I would tell you, Mike, this is such an incredibly beautiful state. I mean, it's really, you come up here and you just feel like your entire mindset changes. This is where you should have brought Willie. You gotta bring him up here.
Yeah,
and sit out on a porch with some women.
He might not ever leave.
Yeah,
become the West Virginia Pelicans.
Yeah, exactly. He's got a nice porch. He can sit on the back there.
Yeah, rocking chairs out there.
Cal, though, this is the problem, and you can imagine the one difference in flood relief up here. They almost lost me last night, Mike. Because it's a scary moment for me. I didn't have my GPS, and as you know, the cell reception, because there's just beautiful hill canyons and mountains everywhere, I got stuck out away from the radius I was comfortable with.
I got back to the house, and he wasn't there, and I'm like, wait, what's going on? Yeah.
If you start hearing banjos, you need to turn it
off. No, but I was thinking about when it comes to flood relief or something, you know, like during Harvey, at the very least, we still had, you know, you could still communicate, but you had these situations up here, and just to try to communicate with people was probably an extra challenge on top of it.
Obviously, a disaster is bad, and Texas is going through it now.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's incredibly sad.
Yeah.
But we'll pull through. We pulled through. Houston pulled through, and hopefully Central Texas will pull through also.
There's a lot of similarities in the people here and the people in Texas. They're resilient and tough, and we've really enjoyed being around all the West Virginians.
Yeah, no doubt. It's been a great trip, for sure, for sure. All right, well, we got to get Hannah in here for sure.
Hi, Coach. Good seeing you.
Coach, good catching up. Mike D'Antoni.
Enjoy your retirement before you get pulled back in 2 months.
Can't wait to see where your next stop is.
Somebody's going to give you a pitch about how you can work from home. You got good internet up here, you know?
Spotty.
Yeah, thank you. Good internet, no phone. That's the only problem. Yeah.
Which I like.
Yeah.
Do you know how nice
until
it is?
Until I have to track your ass down because you missed a turn.
Well, that was probably, I might have died. But like to be able to tell somebody, listen, I'm not going to have cell service for 3 hours. Oh.
That's delightful.
Oh, it's so liberating.
It is really delightful. Yeah. Thank you to Mike D'Antoni for sitting down with us. That was great. And in steps, Hannah McNair. We got Hannah McNair and Cal McNair out here.
That was fun.
That was a nice surprise. Yeah, appreciate that.
He and Laurel D'Antoni are they're awesome.
They're wonderful people.
Yeah.
They offered to take Cal and the boys onto the golf course, but we haven't had time.
Well, Hannah.
We've been fishing and hunting and doing all kinds of stuff up here.
What'd you hunt?
Yes. Hunter's been riding horses.
Clays.
Oh, okay. How many did you kill?
Non-living objects.
Calhoun went 21 for 25.
21 of 25.
Wow.
He beat me, yeah.
No kidding.
His first
that
time.
Is rare.
Okay.
Y'all don't understand.
So how does that feel,
shot.
Dad? How does that feel when the kids start beating you at things like that?
Prideful.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Prideful in all
good.
The best ways.
See? It's your kid. Yeah. Okay, good.
You know what? I'm glad we brought up Laurel D'Antoni, though, too, because there's a similar dynamic between Laurel and Mike D'Antoni and Hannah and Cal McNair in that I'm kind of scared of Hannah. And just like I'm kind of scared of Laurel. And just like Laurel, Hannah gives me a lot of crap. People wouldn't see it, but she busts
a ball breaker.
Yeah.
Man.
And Laurel was the same way. What is it about me that you and Laurel D'Antoni feel like you got to go after me?
You just that lovable face.
Yeah, is that what it is?
It doesn't feel like love.
If we're giving you a hard time, it's like that family vibe.
Okay, good. Yeah. I'll take that.
So how things? This has been great out here. What made this the year to come back to the Greenbrier?
Well, last year we went to
Ohio.
Else,
yeah.
And so this year they were kind of looking around where to go, and D'Amico had been here before. And we had been here before, and so it was sort of a, you know, logical place. And then from here, the team will go to Minnesota.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's not exactly Minnesota, but it's a little closer than Houston.
Mm-hmm.
So getting out of the heat and everything for 4 or 5 practices and coming up here all made sense.
Yeah, the one thing that we were talking about is that it's kind of like with all the rules in place and everything, you're kind of limited in how physically demanding you can make training camp. But those first couple of weeks in the Houston Heat, that's as close as you're going to get to the Junction Boys. And and it seems like you got to figure
Cal
out.
Cal lit up. Yeah. Cal lit up at that.
Yeah. Well, you made that reference the other day.
Well played,
I feel like he's copying you.
I don't listen to anything other than our show. So but you got to balance those two things, because obviously an injury during training camp can be devastating. So you got to try to balance that. Okay, it's grueling and it's tough, but also, all right, we got to pull back at a certain point. And it coming up here in this weather, it's less physically. You guys can recover a little bit from the practice better.
And dehydration and all that. And as you know, when you start training camp, you're in maybe the best shape you've ever been. At the end, you're worn out, you're beat up.
Yeah.
And then you're going to start playing games.
Yeah.
So really, we want them to feel the best they felt right before they start playing games.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a good way, you know, to try to do that.
Yeah, it's kind of like you're tapering for a long distance run or something.
Right, right.
Dom
right.
Capers once tried to pull that game with me, where he said, you know, I read an article about the Tour de France, and that at the end of the Tour de France, these guys are in the best shape of their lives.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, but you know what they don't do? They don't go out and do another Tour de France right after. So you got to, they got to, coach, you got to figure out, there's got to be a rest and recuperation period.
Yeah. Was this when you were doing 2-a-days?
Yeah. This is like
a different world.
It was still, the real tough stuff was never, by the late 90s, everything wasn't as bad as it used to
no.
be. It wasn't like back what the Oilers had to do.
No. We were talking earlier. We got Cal and Hannah McNair with us here live at Texans training camp at the Greenbrier. It feels like I could say this about the last two or three off seasons. It's been a big off season for the team. And the big contracts are starting to pop up here. Derek Stingley's contract and Jalen Petrie gets a deal next summer. We know what that could look like with Will and with CJ. And I'm just curious, I'm not going to name other teams, but other teams kind of drag their feet on things like this. You guys have been at the opposite end of that as a team, notably so around the league. You know, Nick has been out in front of these things, doing them soon. And I'm curious, especially the size of these deals. I'm just curious, ownership perspective on the strategy that the front office has taken in making sure that this core nucleus stays together.
Well, that's our hope, is to draft really well and then keep the young players, you know, on your team, is keep as many as you can. And that's what we were able to do this offseason, as you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll try to do that next year. We're already budgeting that, because it's going to be some large numbers coming up, and we got to be ready for it, because we want to keep our really good players.
Yeah.
So that's exactly our game plan.
Yeah.
But don't tell anyone that's what.
No. Yeah, nobody's listening, Cal. It's fine. Yeah,
it's just us.
It's right. It's all good. Well, it's got to be pretty gratifying. I mean, the training camp this year, the lines around the corner, the fans out there, and you guys greeting them out there. Did you guys ever get a chance to kind of reflect? And I know Super Bowl is the goal and all that stuff, but where the place that you guys are in right now and where you've come. So far in the last few years, you ever get a chance to reflect on that, just in terms of the vibe around the team?
Yes, I would say everybody seems a lot happier now. We're all on the same page. We're all working towards the same goal. I think we had this conversation yesterday, you guys, after practice.
Yeah.
So I just think that it's in a good place, and you appreciate it more from where we've come from, and I just think we're in a really good spot.
But it's always a work in process, and we never want to, you know, sit back and go, oh, we're there, because there is no finish line.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to be hip to hip, all the guys in the room, and try to get where we've never been before. And to do that, you know, we're looking at a few years ago, we're looking at kind of big things to change, and now we're always looking at little smaller things to change and get better, and trying to get the thing that will get us where we want to go.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a bunch of little things that we're not going to sit back and just say, hey, we're great, we're where we want to be, but we're not. We're
going
to keep working and keep changing.
You said hip to hip with the guys in the room. I sure would like to be hip to hip with you too.
Well, these chairs are too far apart.
Oh, with you as well. Okay. I thought you meant you two as like Cal and somebody else, and I was like, who is it? What's up?
I'm tied in with this cord.
Well, you know what? Sean and I will joke sometimes about just the challenges of being an NFL owner.
Joanna.
There you go.
Hey, Joanna.
Okay.
she runs out of the shot.
You know what, though? I'm sorry. I got to turn it back around. They don't want us. That's filming.
There's football things going on.
Oh, you're
going to
get in big trouble.
Yep. Yeah. Idiots. Put in a good word with D'Amico.
Now, the guys on the sideline are blocking it, but you never know. Changing a football organization is kind of like steering an ocean liner. Like, there's big decisions that you make that have ramifications for a long time. So Sean and I will joke about how, hey, having a good NFL team is easy. All you have to do, it's simple. You just got to hire the right GM and the right head coach.
Yeah.
And like, what? Like,
easy,
that's all
peasy.
You got to do.
Yeah.
But it's hard. And it's not just the individual. Because I'll say this about Charlie Casserly and Dom Capers. I think I love both of those guys individually.
Absolutely.
I don't know if maybe that was the best pairing and matchup. And it's not because either guy is the wrong guy or not good at what he does. It's just, it's hard to figure out who the right team is.
They don't see the game the same way.
Yeah. And it's just, it's not a good or a bad thing, a reflection on either individual. And I guess from an owner's perspective, because I feel really good about the matchup of Nick and D'Amico, obviously. Like, when did you start to get a feel for, all right, these guys are working well together?
Great question, because that is part of, the challenge is to get those two guys working hip to hip and seeing through the same lens. And the more Nick understands a player that D'Amico wants, the better he can draft and bring in that player through free agency or however, whatever means, and the more D'Amico can get that vision through all of his coaches, the more it shows up on the field, and all those things have to work together. And so Hannah and I knew D'Amico from when he was here, but Nick really didn't know him.
Yeah.
And so in the interview process, we saw Nick go, I'd like to interview this guy, and as we worked through it, it was, this guy and I see things the same way.
Yeah.
And we're going to make a great team. And we're so excited because we knew both of them and felt the same way. And so for that to come together, it came together very, very early in the process.
You're fixing two people up. You know what I mean? I think this guy would get along good with this guy. And it's worked out so well. I mean,
before we made the decision to move on from the coach, we had to go get a new coach that year. Those were some hard conversations because we knew what was coming for us as soon as Cal decided to let Lovey go. Mm-hmm. We knew what we were going to get, but we just had to stay strong, and we knew what we were wanting. So you can't let that moment pass you by. You got to go.
And he's a wonderful person.
Yeah,
so
Lovey is
Coach Cully's wonderful people.
Yeah. Yep.
But sometimes it just doesn't work. So.
And then there's the old thing, too. It's almost like calling up an ex-girlfriend or something when you're newly single, I'm told. Just with D'Amico, obviously you knew D'Amico, and you had great and fond memories of him. But at the same time, like, you didn't know if he was going to be interested, but you knew he was available.
Yeah.
And just, maybe like a post on Facebook. Like, at what point did you start to realize that?
What point did you start liking things on D'Amico's Facebook?
This is a real thing. Facebook. Like, yeah, we might actually get back together with
Cal, D'Amico. Cal, do you have a Facebook?
I'm not sure I'm following this whole thing.
So, at what point?
I have no idea what you're talking about. So when we play other teams, I'll go talk to their coaches.
Yeah.
That's what we meant.
You'll see a team whose defense is playing really well.
Yeah.
And you'll take note of that. You'll see an offense that's responding and changing and doing things really well. And so you'll sort of take note of that and sort of know, over the course of years of homework and who seems to be doing a good job and not. And so when the process opens up and you have to go out and do those interviews, you want to interview the guys that are putting out a great defense,
yeah,
or putting out a great offense, and they're communicating, and they're able to handle the press conference. They're able to stand up in front of a room and teach the guys and all those things. And coming from a head coach that you might really respect a lot means all those things sort of go together, mm-hmm, and putting together your list of who you want to go talk to.
And the benefit of knowing his personality and what a leader he is, so that also helped with the D'Amico.
Yeah, I mean, he was a captain in high school. He was a captain in college. He, as you know, he stepped onto the field and he became captain of the defense for us. And so at every level, he showed those leadership, and he really wanted to lead, and he was really good at it.
You know, that's
at all different levels.
Well, you brought up, you know, the guys that have been, when they're coordinators, you can watch their press conferences, and you can see necessarily how they, which, you know, you don't want to think that that's a big part of it, and it shouldn't be, and yet it is, because you're the forward-facing representation of the team. And it's, I'm always struck by, a lot of times guys become coaches and head coaches, and they actually don't genuinely have that much experience with the media or with being at the podium and everything. And and sometimes it's comical when you start to see it. So is that, do you actually, when you start thinking about potential candidates, you're sitting down and you're watching some of these coordinator press conferences?
Yeah, well, we look at a whole lot of things, and that is one of the things that is of interest to me, see how he stands up in front of a group and answers questions. And
Hannah, you're holding back a laugh. Is that, who are you thinking about? Which press conference are you thinking of? You don't have to say it.
I can't. I'll tell you after.
I can't wait for this.
Yeah.
It could be one of 78. There's like 78 different examples out there.
So is you holding your hand over your mouth a new and improved Hannah, or is this?
I'm trying.
Okay.
Omar's like watching.
From a content standpoint, I like the old Hannah. I'm just saying. All right.
I'm trying to be good.
Okay,
I don't know that we'd know anything about a head coach who doesn't know how to handle press. I don't think we need to know anything about that.
At all.
As far as what you've seen out here at training camp so far.
No, Omar's taking.
Yeah.
But I'm helping you out here. What, as far as what you guys have seen out of training camp so far, what are the the positive developments? We talk about, like, the offense is obviously, they're starting off with the defense having a big head start. You know, the defense is ready to go in a lot of ways. The offense is trying to work a lot of new things out. I thought that a couple days ago, some of the physicality from the offensive line showed up in a way that I know that they're hoping for.
I'm still trying to get over what Hannah was talking about. So.
Okay.
No, I think the defense is showing how good their potential is, and we got to go play games, but it's really, really exciting for us to see that. And I think they're pushing the offense to their limits. And I'm excited to see the offense go against a team with a different color jersey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think they are, too.
I think they're going to, you know, have better results, but I think they're seeing a really good defense right now.
No doubt. All right, well, we got to get out top of the hour coming up here. We appreciate you guys sitting down with us.
This is coming out. Who's crosstalk?
Lopez. We're a little late on crosstalk. I butchered the whole clock to accommodate you guys.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you need some ads here.
Yeah, so
pay the bills.
I'm willing to go take the heat for it for you guys.
I got to go pay out-of-state tuition at University of Oregon.
It's a fun hobby.
Yeah.
Hey, seriously, we appreciate you guys and appreciate you bringing the team here, because that means we got to come here and we've really enjoyed this whole week. This has been excellent.
It's all for you.
Yeah, thank you. Hopefully it's an annual tradition. Yeah.
Hold on, I got to get in. It's great to see Seth here right next to you.
Oh, thank you.
couldn't resist. The old Hannah is still here. That's good to see.
It's like when a child comes home, you're like, welcome back.
He's slid into my DMs on Facebook.
Facebook.
Cal DMs are this thing that, never mind. Yeah.
You do not need to know anything.
All right. Cal and Hannah McNair, we appreciate you guys. As always, that was a lot of fun. The owners of the Houston Texans. When we come back, we'll do a little bit of crosstalk with the guys on In the Loop, find out what they've got going on. We'll do that coming up next, live from the Greenbrier. Stay there. All right. Payne and Pendergast, and it's actually just Pendergast right now because we just got done having a great conversation with Cal and Hannah McNair, and the mood has been entirely dampened here.
Yes, it has.
Texans training camp. Okay, good. John and Reggie are in studio right now. Guys, I'm going to lay the scene out for you here, but
please.
It sounds like you've seen the tweets. Literally, as we're finishing up with Cal and Hannah, the players are all down on a knee, and from our vantage point, we can't see who the injured player is or was, and it was C.J. Gardner-Johnson, and the players were down on a knee. The gravitas of it, you could tell it was a serious injury. We didn't see the injury happen. We only saw the aftermath of it, but I'm seeing tweets from plenty of people who were sitting in the bleachers over here saying it looked like a serious knee injury. They just carted him off the field, like not rode a cart, like carted off like you see an injured player. And the you know, one of his legs is stretched out there. The other leg is kind of in a bent position. And they just took him into the Sports Performance Center here. He needed to be helped off of the cart by two Texan staffers. So this was not this was not a knee injury where he's kind of limping and he rode a cart just to, you know, to save on the stress on the knee. He needed to be helped off of the cart and into the performance center. So this looks to be a serious knee injury. And the players, when they got back up from being down on a knee, D'Amico gathered the players at midfield of the field that they're scrimmaging on and talked to them for a good 3 or 4 minutes. Mm. So we don't know what was said, obviously, but it wasn't like they just scooped C.J. Gardner-Johnson off the field and put the ball down and said, all right, let's go, ones against ones. I mean, there was a conversation that took place with D'Amico Ryans and the other 89 players on this team at midfield. So just a terrible way to end up the week in what's been a phenomenal week here at the Greenbrier in West Virginia.
Yeah, I mean, that's you set the scene very well there, Sean. I mean, that's very important. And you talked about gathering the guys together. Not to say that this is a one-to-one correlation, but if I remember correctly, that's exactly how it happened when Keontae Hamilton had his injury that ultimately landed him on the IR. They brought him back together to kind of have a conversation, I imagine, to refocus the fellas before they got out to get more work.
Yeah, and I would imagine this was probably a different kind of conversation just based on where C.J. Gardner-Johnson is in the pecking order for this team. I would imagine he's probably established himself as a part of the heartbeat of this defense just based on his personality. I just feel awful for him. I had a chance to talk to him for about 10 minutes in an interview after practice one day earlier this week, and he was so excited and is excited. You know, we don't know yet if it's an injury that's season ending or anything like that, but it doesn't look good. The optics of it don't look good right now. He was so excited to be a Texan and talked about how this was one of the most competitive camps he's been a part of. And he's, as you guys know, he's been with several different teams over the last few years, and he doesn't seem to be a guy who minces words or says things that he doesn't mean. And so for him, not to get too experienced, if indeed it's a serious season-ending injury. And now with the Texans, you have to speculate, okay, what do you do at safety? I mean, we've been sitting here saying what a genius pickup that was with C.J. Gardner-Johnson, because, boy, if he wasn't here, then think about what they'd be trotting out here at safety for this team. With the ones, it'd be M.J. Stewart or Russ Yeast. We know Jimmy Ward is in a situation right now. I don't know if he's here in West Virginia or not, but we know he's still dealing with an injury and a legal issue. So what went from a real strength on this team is basically Kalen Bullock and a bunch of guys right now.
Yeah, that's exactly all those things were going through my mind. I imagine that's going to be what we spend a majority of our first conversation about.
Yeah.
I know that they probably won't enjoy this particular association, but always appreciative to D&M Auto Leasing for the opportunity.
Thank you.
To chat with you. But one thing I want to ask you, especially since you had that conversation with C.J. Gardner-Johnson earlier in the week, did you get a feel that like he's gotten a really good feel of what the offense is? Because my brain started going, if this is not a significant injury, he is the type of player, though, with the experience that he has, where mental reps will be enough and he can jump back in and get to work if he feels like he has a good grasp on what the defense is at this point.
Yeah, I think he seems fine. Like he's had a good camp. He's played well in this camp. So I don't get the sense. There's nothing I've watched with him. Now, look, it's not like this first string offense has challenged this first string defense on the regular here at camp. So they haven't really put him in a bunch of positions where he'd be out of position, get beat by a deep shot, things like that. But it's a really good point, Reggie. If indeed he's able to come back, then yeah, the mental reps will help him. I would hope too that if he's not able to come back, that he's still around the team in some way, because you do have a lot of youth on this defense still, and his perspective might help. We remember last year when Stephon Diggs went down with a knee injury, he ceased to be around the team. So one of those ancillary benefits of Stephon Diggs when he was healthy was, boy, what a great example, you know, in terms of just the work ethic and how you go about practicing for Tank Dell and Nico Collins. And then he's gone. You know, he disappears. So we'll see. I mean, this injury happened 10 minutes ago. So we're talking about stuff that's going to unfold over the next several weeks and months. But it's such a downer for what's been a phenomenal 4 days here.
Yeah. I mean, look, that's all the conversation I think we're about to have. I imagine that you want to go and see what's happening with the team as they – I mean, it's a scrimmage day. This is supposed to be a big day to get a little bit of a better feel of what this Texans team is as they finish out their time at the Greenbrier. We'll talk to you again here at 12:40, and just so you can have more stuff to talk about, we will release you to do that. We appreciate you sitting with us, man.
Yeah, man.
Fellas, have a good show. Appreciate you guys.
You're listening to KILT AM, KILT FM, HD2 Houston, and Odyssey Sports Station right now.